WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Jerry Gross. Since leaving the White House, Jimmy Carter has traveled around the world mediating international conflicts. He's also become a successful writer of nonfiction, memoirs, and poetry. His new book is a children's story, illustrated by his 25-year-old daughter, Amy, who is now studying art history in graduate school. Amy was 9 when her father was elected president. She'd spent most of her earlier life in the Georgia governor's mansion. We invited Jimmy and Amy Carter to talk with us about their new collaboration and what family life was like back when they were the first family. Their new book, The Little Baby Snooglefleeter, is based on stories Jimmy Carter used to tell his children. It's about a lonely boy who was befriended by an intimidating underwater creature known as a snooglefleeter.
Well, this was a hero of a lot of stories that I told my children beginning maybe 40, 45 years ago. And this is a monster, but a young one, but still very large and extremely ugly. And he comes out of the ocean on occasion to become involved in adventures with little children who were about the same age as my children when I told them the stories. And he interrelates in a very exciting and dramatic way to help resolve some of their problems or to deal with crises that affect their lives. And so the little baby snooglefleeter is always fearsome to all the other kids, and usually in the stories, the hero of that particular story, the little child, is the only one who can relate to the little baby snooglefleeter. Because he is so ugly and formidable looking, he's a very lonely little creature. And he's always searching for friends, but rarely finds any. Spends his time underneath the ocean, underneath the waters, but he can come up to the top on occasion. And amazingly, he's able to speak different languages. In this particular case, he speaks English.
And he can actually be quite a friendly little monster, or a big monster. Amy, what did you like about the snooglefleeter stories when you were a kid?
Oh, well, they changed really rapidly in the telling, and there was always very exciting passages about wonderful treasures and cities under the ocean. And I guess it appealed to me because of the young child who is the protagonist. Mm-hmm. Having something magical happen to him that then sort of changed his life and allowed other people to see something in the monster that was beyond the way he looked on the surface. So the small child would bring other people into seeing the beauty of the sea monster.
Jimmy Carter, do you think you invented an undersea creature in part because you were stationed on a submarine in your military days?
Well, I think so. I probably began telling these stories when I was still on a surface ship, but I always had submarines in the back of my mind, and one of the submarines I was on was a killer submarine designed exclusively to hunt and destroy Soviet submarines if we should have had gone to war before they could hear us. It was extremely quiet and very small, and specially designed. So we would stay submerged for sometimes days at a time and listen to the sound of shrimp and whales and dolphins on our very elaborate sonar equipment. And I think there's no doubt that having an undersea creature become a startling hero came from my experiences underneath the water for sometimes days or even months at a time.
Amy Carter, your father describes the little baby snooglefleeter as an ugly creature. How did you decide to draw it? What the colors you used, the shape you gave it, where did you get your visual impression from? How did you come up with it?
I actually looked at a lot of fish and old National Geographics.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to have his skin be sort of modeled. And I guess perhaps I didn't really try to make him as ugly as I could have, but I added his big teeth sort of in that way and just sort of green moldy colors. So
I should say for our listeners who are hearing unusual sounds in the background that is not the snooglefleeter. That's actually the sounds of construction near the NPR studio in New York. So I hope that's not too distracting.
When we got the first drawings from Amy of the little baby Snugglefish, I was startled because for 40 years I had had a very clear picture of what the baby Snugglefish looked like, and so did my wife. But Amy's image of the Snugglefish was totally different from my own. It took us 2 or 3 days with Amy's with the photograph of Amy's first drawing on the mantelpiece. We would go by and look at it for a few minutes at a time, and it finally dawned on us that Amy's, you know, image of the baby Snugglefish was much superior to what we had always dreamed it looked like. So we were surprised with the appearance of the baby Snugglefish as little Jeremy was in the book.
Well, what was your impression of what the creature should look like? Would you have something more like Godzilla in mind?
No, not really. What I had was kind of a cross between a T-Rex and an Allosaurus or a Brontosaurus, you know, more like a standard kind of dinosaur. This was in the days before dinosaurs, you know, were cool. It was when dinosaurs were not known by many people, and so I always envisioned it looking more like a dinosaur. But I have to say that Amy Snugglefish does not look like a dinosaur.
So what was it like for the two of you to collaborate on something? Sometimes it's very hard for family members to work together, or particularly to learn to drive from each other. That's something I don't recommend. But what was it like to work on a book together? I mean, Jimmy Carter, you're the father, and therefore are used to being in control or wanting to have control, but that's not the attitude to have when you're collaborating with somebody.
I had been through a horrible experience writing a book together with my wife a few years ago called Everything to Gain. It almost destroyed a marriage of 48 years because it was about a traumatic experience in our life, having been defeated for re-election as president, having lost all our money, having gone back home to an empty house with all our kids gone. And the book was advice on how other people might deal with these unexpected and difficult events. Rosa and I could agree on 97% of the text, but the 3% became paramount. And we had a horrible experience, literally. I'm not exaggerating. We could only communicate by writing ugly messages back and forth on our word processors. And it was only a very enlightened editor who saved our book and saved our marriage by finally taking those 3% of paragraphs and saying, and dividing them half and half. Half of Jimmy's, half of Rosalind's. And you can put a J on your paragraphs. Rosen doesn't have to agree, and she can put an R on her paragraphs, and you don't have to agree. So we saved our book. So I went into this event with Amy with that as a historical background. This time, though, Amy was off at graduate school. I was in Plains, and I felt that it was my story and my image of a Snugglefish, and Amy just had to fill in the gaps. But it turned out that Amy has an artist's temperament when she decides on how something should look, how it should be presented. There's very little opportunity to change her mind. And I think not only did I discover this, but the Art Editor Times books found this out. So there wasn't ever any chance for argument much. The only thing that we suggested was that the little Jeremy, who deals with the Snugglefish, might appear somewhat younger than Amy's first version. And I would say, I think Amy's sitting here looking at me, not knowing what I'm going to say, but I would think that her changes in the young kid's face were minuscule, but made him look younger. That's the only thing we ever had, but we got along quite well.
Amy, did you need family therapy by the time the book was done?
No, actually not. It went really smoothly, and I think part of that was just the timing in my life, and I suppose in Dad's life was really conducive to working together.
Why was the timing right in your life, Amy?
Just more, you know, I'm living in a place I love and grad school's going really well. And I was just very calm about all sorts of family interactions and feeling good about that stuff. I think it would have been more difficult if I had tried to do this when I was younger.
Amy, I know that there was a period when you were at Brown University when you engaged in a student protest against CIA recruiting on campus. Mm-hmm. That ended up in a big court case. You spent a lot of time away from your actual schoolwork and ended up, I believe, being expelled. I'm wondering if that was a turning point in you deciding what you wanted to do what you wanted to study and what you wanted to be. I mean, were you pursuing art then, or did that kind of little crisis get you onto a different and ultimately maybe more satisfying course?
Oh, I definitely think so. I was actually pursuing art to some degree at Brown,
mm-hmm.
but I guess it really made me consider what kind of environment I really felt comfortable in, instead of like the idea that I had been set up for, particularly by going to a prep school in Georgia that was sort of geared towards the Ivy League.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that came to a head. And I also returned to the South at that point and went to Memphis, which was really, I think, probably an important step for me, just in terms of the fact that moving so much, I needed some, or I felt like it was time to sort of deal with what area of the country was really my home, and like explore Georgia to a fuller extent and be close to family and friends.
Mm-hmm. You went there. To Memphis College of Art.
Yep, I did.
Another thing was that Amy had been very active in demonstrations against apartheid in South Africa.
Right.
And she had already been arrested or detained 3 times before that. She was very active in college as a leader in that respect. But at the same time, I think very withdrawn and, if Amy will excuse my saying the word, shy person. She didn't want to be confronting TV cameras and news reporters, but she felt very deeply about these kinds of things.
Amy, it sounds like you're a mix of very shy and defiant.
I think that's exactly right.
That's one reason that we don't really argue with Amy when she tells us that she decided to do something. The defiant part.
Amy, you said that you know, you kind of learned early on how to make a strong case. Was this like part of growing up in the family, that you were supposed to make a very kind of logical case to defend your belief, whether it was political or what you wanted to do over the weekend?
Oh, absolutely. I think I actually share that. I might even consider that a primary trait of my family. I think that all of my brothers and my parents are very vocal, and there was always definitely a sense that that debate took place, even if people disagreed, everyone's opinion was heard.
And were the rules like, if you could give a well-thought-out, logical explanation for what you wanted to do, that it would be more accepted?
Absolutely. Or even if it was disagreed with in the end, I definitely think that everyone in my family feels like their voice is heard.
Also, there are 2 or 3 members of our family who will take either side in order to create an argument. So we have some intense discussions or debates or arguments within our family, and always have since the kids were young. Mm-hmm. And Rosa and I have encouraged that. And I might add quickly that whether or not we had encouraged it, it would have occurred, because that's the kind of children we have.
My guests are Jimmy and Amy Carter. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Jimmy and Amy Carter are my guests, and they've collaborated on a new children's book called The Little Baby Snugglefleeter. Jimmy Carter wrote the story. Amy Carter did the illustrations. And this is a story that Jimmy Carter told to Amy Carter and to his older children as well. Child or children? Older?
Children. Three boys.
Oh, great. Okay. As well. Jimmy Carter, you were governor and president. Was there much time when you were in those positions to actually tell stories to Amy?
I think never enough. You know, this is something that you always find to be startling when you look back and maybe tabulate how many hours you actually spend with your sons or daughter whom you really love. And then you can go a year or so and all of a sudden realize, gee, I haven't spent but 2 or 3 days actually with my kids. Nowadays, we have a fixed habit of going off for at least a week with the whole family together. There are 18 of us. And we'd go skiing in Colorado, or go down to Disney World, or go to Belize or Panama, or go on a Caribbean cruise. And we do that every year so that we can kind of get to know each other better and become acquainted. But this is a particularly exciting and unpredictable experience in my life, spending a few days with Amy on, you know, talking about this book, because I don't think I've ever had a real partnership before, even with my three sons. So I have approached it with some degree of trepidation, but I have to say this interview has helped me overcome some of my concerns.
How does a first family put aside time as family time? What family time did you actually have together in the White House?
Well, I'll let Amy answer that too, but but I stayed, you know, in the Oval Office and worked pretty hard, and we had three grown sons and Rosalind, who were out a lot, who would meet with elderly people, meet with those who were interested in abortions, meet with those who were interested in education and health and welfare and so forth. And Amy was going to a public school in Washington. So around our dinner tables and so forth, supper tables, we had these intense discussions of what's going on in the world, what's going on out in the public school system or in the welfare lines. And it was a very wonderful education for me. Amy went to school the first morning as a 9-year-old child, and she was inundated with TV cameras and radio microphones being thrust in her face. And that evening on the television, they showed this little child struggling up the walkway with a large sack of books, abused really by dozens of eager reporters. All the reporters that were at the White House at that time, I think they were only 1,200 then, they're more now, got together after seeing this television display and pledged to one another they would leave Amy alone. So for the rest of the 4 years we were in the White House, she led a kind of a protected life, and she would bring her classmates to the White House to go swimming or to watch movies. And so I think she had a fairly normal life as a child within the bounds of, you know, living in the White House. Maybe Amy would disagree with me, but that was my impression.
Amy, how much family time did you actually have in the White House years?
I actually think from discussions with both my parents that they feel are more concerned about that than I remember or than I was at the time, because I really remember it as being very frequent. Like, there was never a time when I could not walk into anyone's office and speak to them. I remember having dinners together. And
how often would you have dinner together?
I think we had, well, my memory might be shaky, but I think we had dinner together very regularly.
Almost every night. The only exception was when we had a state banquet and some king or president would come from a foreign country to have an official banquet. On a few occasions, Amy went to the official banquets.
Mm-hmm.
And she was severely criticized
for reading.
For reading at the table.
I completely identify. I completely identify. I used to bring a book with me to a lot of family events and be roundly chastised for it. But, you know, I used to be really bored, to be honest, with a lot of adult events when I was a kid. It was like, well, they're talking about adult things, and, you know, I don't care. I'd rather watch TV. But, Amy, when you were surrounded by adult events, it was, you know, like presidents from other countries and, you know, probably, you know, famous performers who were doing White House mm-hmm. performances and things like that. Were you interested in these very famous adults, or were they uninteresting to you also?
There are several that I remember meeting that I was really drawn to and happy to have known. Just kind of mixed group, but Sadat I remember very vividly. He's one of the people that I met that I think I was most thrilled to meet because he was so kind and would come and say goodnight to me before he left.
Huh.
Which, and I think maybe it was the people who went out of the way to treat me, who went out of the way to say hello to the one who was young. That I remember. Cher is actually another person I remember. I was completely overwhelmed.
Really?
By meeting Cher. And John Travolta. There were some really, you know, I was young and I really admired people.
That was when she was married to one of the Allman Brothers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they both came.
And her fingernails. I still remember her fingernails because I thought they were so beautiful.
But they were really long? They're probably fake.
They were very long. But she was very sweet to me, too.
Nice.
Yeah, she spoke to me. I feel like she spoke to me about an hour alone. Huh. So I think it made me feel adult.
Yeah.
Probably.
I remember when King Hussein came to the White House the first or second time with his sons, and we had, I think Rosen had briefed Amy, you know, very carefully about, you know, your Royal Highness and so forth. And so as they approached each other, Amy said, "Hi, how you doing?" And we never did. And they relaxed very quickly and became friends.
Jimmy and Amy Carter, they collaborated on the new children's book, The Little Baby Snugglefleeger. They'll be back in the second part of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Jimmy and Amy Carter. They've collaborated on a new children's book called The Little Baby Snugglefleeger. Jimmy Carter wrote the story. Amy Carter did the illustrations. She's now 25 years old, studying art history in graduate school. She was 9 when her father was elected president. We talked a little about what life was like when they were the first family. Did either of you ever really feel at home in the White House, or are you always conscious of the fact that it's a lot of people's homes and you're there for a finite amount of time?
No, I think we really felt surprisingly at home. I did. We had a good time. We enjoyed going to Camp David on the weekends. Amy would roller skate through the halls of the White House and swim in the pool. And Harry Truman did a nice thing when he was in the White House. He installed a bowling alley in the basement, so when the snow came and the rain was there, we could go down in the basement and bowl. And on Friday night, sometimes, Amy would bring almost her entire class from school, and they would watch movies all night. Mm-hmm. So there were some nice things there. And our family was very close. We had campaigned together, and that was my sons and their wives. And we had a team that was very cohesive. And as I said, Amy was kind of a second generation, but she was a darling of what was in effect 4 fathers. Our youngest son was 15 when Amy was born. Our oldest son was 20.
Amy, I know you were a congressional page for a while. Did you ever think about a political career?
No, never. I never considered it.
Why?
I'm just not.
Not cut out for it.
Not cut out for it.
And why not?
Because public speaking is just the very worst thing that I can imagine doing. I even have difficulties, you know, in class presentations in graduate school. I actually much prefer to write. I think just shy and not really about my opinions, but I don't speak very forcefully.
It must have been, I guess, very hard to grow up being seriously shy in an environment where all eyes are on you. I mean, you live in a show place, you're the first family, you're always in the spotlight.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it was a matter of being shy and having that happen, or if that is actually why I ended up being shy.
Oh, right, as a reaction against all the probing attention.
Yeah, I think that might be more the case.
Uh-huh. What advice would you both have for the public about what you think is our business and what you think is none of our business when it comes to the lives of the people in the White House?
You know, I really think that that's a decision that can be made by the people in the White House. Let me give you one example, and I'm not being critical, but when I was president, I was running about 7 miles a day, 40 miles a week. I was an avid runner. I never had the press follow me on a run. That was one of our best-kept secrets, when and where I was going to run. Quite often out by the CNO Canal, and sometimes over around Haynes Point and different places, but always without any knowledge by the press. The first time I met with President Clinton, after he moved into the White House, he was complaining to me that the Secret Service and he were followed by the press when he ran. And I said, well, they won't follow you unless you don't let them know ahead of time. But he said, well, I'll think about that. But he still prefers for the press to follow him while he's running. And another thing was, I'm an avid fly fisherman. One of the best kept secrets of my presidency was that I would slip off to Camp David. The White House press would leave me. I'd get back on the helicopter about an hour later and fly up to a secret place in Pennsylvania and fish for a couple of days and come back to the Camp David, meet the press, and go back to the White House. They never knew it. I couldn't keep secrets about, Russian things and weapons and so forth, but I kept secrets about where I was going to run. So the point I'm making is that I think that each president, each family can decide whether or not they want to be exposed to the press. Another thing is, we had two sons living in Washington. One was Chip, who thoroughly enjoyed every aspect of being one of the first sons. I mean, he relished in it. We had another son, a little younger, named Jeff, who did not want any publicity. Chip got maximum publicity. Jeff got zero. So there again, there's a choice to be made by a public figure, how much you want your private life to be exposed.
Amy, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I sort of agree with that. Although I think at times that perhaps it's unavoidable that things are going to be written about you, or that the press is going to relate things that you would prefer not to be public knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But since there's nothing that you can really do about it, I really believe that the thing to do is just to develop within yourself some kind of view of that happening that allows you to ignore it.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
It has.
Jimmy and Amy Carter collaborated on the new children's book, The Little Baby Snoogle Fleeger. This is Fresh Air.